Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, fitness, prevention, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. This is part two of our series on how to burn fat. If you missed the first part, I would encourage you to go back, but I will summarize it briefly. We talked about how insulin is one of the main causes of overweight and obesity, so therefore we have to control our insulin to control weight. Well, we know that carbohydrates increase insulin, so we have to control our carbohydrates. And if we minimize our carbohydrates, then we have to replace it with something, and that recommendation is fat. I talked a little bit about the ketogenic diet. So again, if you did not hear part one, please go back and listen. And now join me for part two of how to burn fat. So the number three thing you got to do to lose weight, to burn fat, is not eat. You got to fast. Fasting, in my opinion, is one of the key elements that's been missing, not only in weight loss, but just in general health. Fasting has a ton of benefits, and there's a lot out there. And matter of fact, just like the keto diet is kind of trendy right now, intermittent fasting is kind of trendy, and so I'm sure you've heard this term. But fasting has so many health benefits, again, not just for weight loss. So some of the benefits that it has: it can boost metabolism, we'll talk about. It can extend your lifespan. Probably nothing can extend your lifespan more than fasting. It can reduce oxidative damage and inflammation in the body. It removes waste from cells, a process called autophagy. Basically, autophagy is self-eating. Sounds like a bad thing, but it's a good thing. It's spring cleaning in your body, if you will. So it allows your body to clean up the old stuff and the bad stuff, okay? And so when you clean up all the bad stuff, you significantly reduce your risk for things like cancer because you're getting rid of all the bad stuff. Reduce risks of heart disease. It significantly reduces insulin levels, and it makes your insulin levels work better. So meaning it makes the insulin more sensitive. It protects against neurodegenerative diseases. It can increase your growth hormone. One of my favorite things to do is I'll fast for a pretty good while, and then I'll go work out. And then after my workout, I'll go eat a pretty heavy meal after fasting for, you know, 24, 36, sometimes hours, sometimes longer. And what that does gives me a huge growth or a huge boost in growth hormone, a huge surge in growth hormone. So anyway, fasting has a ton of benefits. So fasting can also help you in ketosis, okay? So we talked about what ketosis was, and when you fast, it can help your body get into ketosis faster and stay in ketosis, okay? So you may be asking, well, doctor, you just said a few minutes ago that if we decrease calories, we're going to lower our set point, which is not good. And you're right. But strangely enough, fasting doesn't do that. It actually increases it. So if you do a low-calorie diet, you're going to lower that set point, okay, which is not what we want to do. But if you fast, the set point actually increases a little bit. Fascinating. So I have a little graph here where it basically shows the metabolic changes over 4 days of fasting. And basically what it's showing here is the resting energy expenditure, which is basically just the sum total of your body, you know, doing its thing, okay? And so it shows over a four-day period that it's pretty stable, but the resting energy expenditure actually goes up, okay? So it does not do the same thing that calorie restriction does. So you may be asking, okay, well, but doctor, and I get this all the time with my patients, but I've got to eat. If I don't eat, I get cranky. I get hangry. I get hypoglycemic. I hear that all the time. So a lot of that's mental. It is. And so start slow, okay? And before I go any further, let me say, and please hear me on this. Let me emphasize this, okay? If you are a diabetic, if you are on any kind, especially if you're on any kind of medication like insulin or a medication like gliburide, which is a sulfonylurea, which increases your insulin levels, you cannot do this without consulting a physician, okay? You're going to drop your blood sugar too low because fasting is going to significantly drop your blood sugar. So please consult a physician. Do not do this on your own if you are a diabetic. And once again, just like I mentioned in the ketogenic diet, if you go to your doctor and you say, hey, yeah, I heard this podcast. I want to start fasting just so I can get off some of my diabetes medicines, they're going to say, huh? So you're just going to have to find a doctor that's willing to work with you if you want to do this. And you can come off medications, believe me. If you incorporate all these things that I'm talking about, you can come off diabetes medicines. You can come off insulin. It's not a 100% rule, but you can significantly reduce a lot of medications. Okay, so if you decide you want to start doing this, okay, start, like with anything, start small, okay? So if you haven't fasted at all, now, everybody fasts a little bit at nighttime, and hopefully you're not eating right before you go to bed. If you are, that's a good place to start, is to stop doing that. Start with 12 hours, okay? So that's not hard. If you quit eating by 7 p.m. at night, which you should be, and then you don't eat breakfast until 7 a.m., that's 12 hours. Okay, that's the minimum, folks. That should be a no-brainer. If you're not doing that now, at least start there. Okay, start with 12 hours. Then start doing 16 hours. 16 hours is really not that hard. And 16 hours, in my mind, is kind of the minimum. That's where you start getting some of the benefits of fasting that I just mentioned, you know, the autophagy, stuff like that. You just start getting that at a little bit about 16 hours, okay? 16 hours sounds like a long time. It's not. Once again, if you stop eating at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, you skip breakfast, and you don't eat till lunchtime, you've just gone 16 hours. So people ask, can I have coffee? Yes, as long as it's black. Can't have anything in it. Anything that has calories, or stop the benefits of the fasting. So you can have unsweet tea, you can have water, you can have black coffee. That's about it. So my recommendation is get to where you can do 16 hours several times a week. And as you get pretty good at that, and do that for a little while, and as you're feeling pretty good, then go a little bit longer, okay? Maybe go a day where you skip lunch, and then you don't go till dinner, okay? So if you go from dinner to dinner, you've just gone almost 24 hours, and I would recommend that. I would recommend you do at least a day a week, and actually, if you're very overweight, then probably eventually more than that, but starting off at least a day a week of a 24-hour fast. Okay, I've been doing a 24-hour fast on Sundays for a while now, and I'm not overweight. I'm very lean, as a matter of fact. I just do it for health because it's good for me. Okay, and I've actually, just recently, I've started, I do it twice a week now. So basically, I fast close to 24 hours, Wednesdays and Sundays. As I mentioned in my intro podcast, I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I'm not willing to do or that I don't do myself. Okay? So get in the habit of fasting. Very, very important. So if you're really overweight, like you're 300 pounds or you're 250 pounds and you have a whole lot of weight to lose, you can fast for a long time. So get this out of your mind that you have to eat. Okay? I don't know where that came from, but you don't have to eat. If you are fat, you don't have to eat. You can live a long time without eating. And maybe this will put it in perspective. Okay, so a pound of fat supplies approximately 3,500 calories of energy. 1 pound of fat. So that's about 2 days worth of eating for most people. Let's just say a 180-pound man has 25% body fat. And that's pretty mild in today's standards, okay? 25% is, I see a lot more than that day to day. But anyways, 180-pound man, 25% body fat. So if you do that calculation, he has 45 pounds of body fat. Okay, so we said that the 3,500 calories in 1 pound, so 45 pounds, okay, he's got enough body fat to carry him for 90 days without eating a single calorie before he's in danger of any kind of wasting. 90 days, okay, and that's at 25% body fat, 180-pound man. Now, many of you listening are 300 pounds, so guess how long you can go? Do the math. Now, you're probably thinking, doctor, I'm not going to go 90 days without eating. Well, you're probably not, but I'm trying to bring home a point here. You can, and if you want to do that, you need to be under the supervision of a physician, but if you want to do that, great. One of my obese people came in that was 400 pounds, and they said, doctor, I don't want to eat for 6 months. Fabulous. I'll help you. I'll walk with you through this. It's not a bad thing. So with that in mind, I want to introduce you to, I'm going to probably say his name wrong, but Angus Barbary. So he holds the world record for the longest fast. It's in the Guinness Book of World Record. So longest recorded fast, 382 days, okay, went over a year. I'm just going to read you this article. So let's see. Longest recorded fast lasted 382 days in 1965. He's 27 years old. He weighed 456 pounds. He started what was initially supposed to be a 40-day fast. However, encouraged by his progress, he decided to go on until he reached his goal weight of 180 pounds. The fast was supervised by health professionals who prescribed Angus a daily vitamin supplement, vitamin C, yeast for B vitamins, and the occasional electrolyte supplement. He was allowed to consume any non-caloric beverage as he wished, such as tea, coffee, sparkling water. On day 382 of the fast, he had lost a total of 276 pounds, weighing his goal weight of 180. What's more is that he experienced no significant adverse side effects, and 5 years following the fast, he had maintained his weight loss at 196 pounds. And I'm looking at a picture of him, and he, as you can imagine, I mean, he doesn't look like the same person. Anyways, so fast and just start slow, and you know, and work up to incorporating this in your overall lifestyle. And if you're listening to this and you're not overweight like myself, still fast. It's just got so many health benefits. The other thing I was going to say about fasting, and this is just fascinating to me. So I'm sure you know people who had bypass surgery, you know, who have lost a significant amount of weight. And so what do they have when it's all over? All that skin, all that excess skin. Well, like this gentleman, if you lose it by fasting, guess how much excess skin he had? None. And that is because the body eats it away. We mentioned that autophagy where, you know, the body just kind of self-eats itself. And that's what happens. So when you fast and you lose weight that way, you're not going to have the excess skin. So another benefit. All right, moving on. So the next one is exercise. And I know that I mentioned exercise, you know, is not the main thing for losing weight. And that's correct. But I went ahead and threw out exercise on here because it does help. It probably doesn't help as much as most people think, but it does help. And it's good for you. And it can help, you know, prevent depression and, you know, just keep you motivated. I mean, it's got a lot of benefits, so you need to exercise. And a couple of things I want to mention about exercise. You know, I see a lot of people who they want to lose weight, they want to get to a goal weight, so they sign up for a half marathon or they want to do a marathon. And so they think that because they're running a marathon or they're running a half marathon that that's the best way to lose weight because they're running so much, okay? And they're actually hurting themselves because, and I'll go ahead and take this time to talk about another hormone that I mentioned briefly at the start called cortisol, okay? So we talked about insulin as a hormone. The second hormone is cortisol, okay? Cortisol is a stress hormone. So cortisol goes up naturally in the morning, and that's what wakes us up in the morning. Cortisol also goes up when during times of stress, okay? Now, what it's meant for is to go up for a short period of time, come back down. So people always use the example, if you're getting chased by a bear, your cortisol is going to go up because it's going to put energy into your muscles so you can run away. It's going to increase your heart rate, increase the blood to your lungs, okay? And so that's a good thing. We want that. But we don't want cortisol to go up and stay up. And that's what we see a lot today with, for a lot of reasons, but stress, anxiety, you know, our extremely fast lifestyle, not sleeping well, you know, these are all things that can contribute to weight gain because of the cortisol. So if you're stressed out all the time, again, not sleeping, your cortisol is going to be up. Well, cortisol raises blood sugar. And what happens when we raise blood sugar? We raise insulin. What happens when we raise insulin? It stores body fat, okay? So to keep that insulin down, we've got to keep our cortisol down. To keep our cortisol down, we've got to keep our stress levels down. We've got to sleep well at night. Well, another thing that increases cortisol is chronic cardio, chronic exercise, okay? So when you're running all the time and you're doing severe hard workouts and you're not getting adequate rest, guess what? Your cortisol level is going to go up. And if your cortisol goes up, then I just mentioned how that turns into body fat. So if you're a marathoner and you're wondering why you're not losing weight, that's why you're not losing weight. And the other thing about that chronic cardio is your, you know, makes you hungry all the time, so you're eating more. With you exercising, I'm going to lay out, in my opinion, kind of the best way to exercise for both weight loss and longevity, just to make you healthy, okay? And so the first part of that is just to move, okay? Now, not running 26 miles, but just to move, just to walk, okay? An easy way to do this is shoot for 10,000 steps a day. So if you don't already have a Fitbit, a Garmin, you know, something to record your steps, I would encourage you to get one of those. It's a real easy thing to do. And that's a real easy first step. And you can do this as you're starting off, you know, all these other things that we talked about. But try to hit 10,000 steps a day. So just move. And try to get there when you're in a fasted state. Okay, so if you're trying that 16-hour fast, you're skipping breakfast, you know, try to get most of those steps in the morning. You don't have to. Try to get some steps after you eat, and just whenever you can. But at the end of the day, try to get 10,000 steps, okay? Do some strength training. You don't have to go crazy on this, but try to lift something heavy twice a week. Now, if you're older, elderly, man, weight training is so good for you. And again, that's why I mentioned exercise in here, because it's got so many other benefits, not just weight loss. But as you get older, we start to lose a lot of our muscle, something called sarcopenia. And so to be able to maintain that is so healthy to just decrease risk of osteoporosis and other things. So try to lift something heavy twice a week. 1 to 2 times a week, do something called HIIT training. H-I-I-T stands for high intensity interval training. Okay, sounds fancy. It's super easy to do. That's basically, you can do something called Tabata intervals, which is, say you're on an elliptical machine and you do 20 seconds as hard and fast as you possibly can, and then you rest for 10 seconds, and then you do 20 seconds again really hard, rest for 10 seconds. So that's what's called a Tabata interval. Other things you can do, HIIT type training, is sprinting, and you can do this, again, on an elliptical machine, on a stationary bike. You can do it in the pool, and so you want to go as hard and fast as you can for 30 seconds, okay, and then maybe rest a minute. Or if you're just getting started, you may have to rest 90 seconds. And then you do it again, okay? Hard and fast as you can, 30 seconds. Run. And then rest 60, 90 seconds. And really, all you got to do is about 5 sets of that. And that takes less than 10 minutes. And you will be worn out. If you've never done that before, just trust me and try it. You don't have to do an hour-long workout. I mean, you can do something like this a couple times a week, 10 minutes. Got your heart rate up. It's great. So incorporate some HIIT training. And switch it up a little bit. There's something called the SAID, S-A-I-D principle, meaning specific adaptation to imposed demands. And that's basically a big fancy term that means your body gets used to a certain thing, okay? And so switch it up every now and then. I did CrossFit for many years. One of the things I liked about CrossFit is it's so different every day. You never know what you're going to be getting into. You don't have to do something like CrossFit. I mean, CrossFit is very intense. I'm not necessarily suggesting that. I'm just saying, you know, switch it up every now and then. Okay, so the next thing on our list on how to burn fat is optimize hormones. And so, you know, we talked about insulin being a hormone, and I'm not necessarily talking about insulin. I'm talking about other hormones. For example, thyroid. We tend to see middle-aged women are probably the biggest affected by thyroid, but it can affect anybody. And if your thyroid's low, you can be doing everything perfectly, and it's going to be an uphill battle, okay? Get your thyroid checked. I would also encourage you to get all of your thyroid checked. Most doctors are just checking what's called a TSH, and that's it. But make sure you're getting a free T4, free T3, and again, just you may have to look around to go to a doctor who is familiar with that kind of stuff. Testosterone is another hormone. I'm a big advocate of optimizing testosterone in men and women, especially as you get into middle age and beyond. But I'll take a man, for example, and I'm going to do a whole podcast on this. But, you know, mid-40s, 50s, and we find that he has low or even low normal levels of testosterone. We optimize that, and now all of a sudden he has more energy, he has more motivation to eat right, to lose weight, and so this is very important. Estrogen in women, in postmenopausal women, I mean, this is important, and I'm a big advocate of hormone replacement therapy in women, if done properly. Please don't be taking Premarin and Prempro and those kinds of things. I'm not a fan of those. If you're my patient, you know that. But go see a doctor who knows about proper hormone replacement therapy in men and women. Vitamin D. I see vitamin D, yes, it's a vitamin, but a lot of people consider it a hormone because of the way that it acts. And I see so much vitamin D deficiency. And this is something that's very easy to check and fairly easy to treat. And lastly, cortisol. We talked a little bit about cortisol. And cortisol can really hinder your weight loss efforts as, like I mentioned, it increases blood glucose, which then increases the insulin levels. So you have to find a way to decrease cortisol, which is decrease stress. Now, that's easier said than done. I realize that. But you've got to just find a way to start sleeping better, to start working less, maybe incorporate some meditation. Again, that's a whole nother lecture. But you got to decrease stress to be able to lose weight. Okay, next thing we're going to talk about in the ways to burn fat is cold thermogenesis. And this may be a new one to you. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of the ketogenic diet, and I'm sure you've heard of intermittent fasting, and you may not have heard of cold thermogenesis. And you're probably thinking, what the heck is cold thermogenesis? Well, cold thermogenesis is just that. It's getting cold, and it's the body's response to cold. You know, I think we as a society are way too comfortable. We think we have to be comfortable all the time, and our house has to be 72 degrees all the time. And sometimes when we're a little uncomfortable, it is actually healthy. Something called hormesis. We take a little bit of a stressful activity, and it actually makes us healthier. So on my slideshow here, I have a picture of myself in my swimming pool when we have about, it's snowing, and there's, I don't know, several inches of snow on the ground, and you can see snow in the pool and it actively snowing, and I think this was in January or February in Oklahoma, and I'm in the pool, and I remember posting this on Facebook, and people were like, I'm assuming your pool's heated, and like, no, of course it's not heated. Why would I get in it if it's heated? So anyways, again, I don't do anything or I don't tell you to do anything that I'm not willing to do myself. So, you know, I first got introduced to this by a friend of mine, and I'm actually, hopefully we'll have him on a future podcast, but he was way ahead of his time, and he was doing this kind of thing before I knew anything about it. And I'd heard about this guy, you know, getting in his pool in the wintertime. Like, what in the world kind of crazy is this guy doing? As I began learning about longevity and health, well, this kept coming up. This cold thermogenesis kept coming up. And I was like, huh, well, this guy's onto something. And so finally, I was like, okay, I got to try this. And so I kept trying to get in my pool in the wintertime. and it wasn't going very well. And so I called him over, and he walked me through all the breathing and all the exercises, and then he ended up got you know, getting me in the pool, and we stayed in there. I think we stayed in there for 4 minutes when it was 40. I think the water was 40 something degrees. Anyway, so how in the world does this help with burning fat? Well, when you get a cold exposure like that, you have a significant release of norepinephrine. I'm not going to go through the whole science here, but basically it causes a lot of processes to start fatty acid oxidation to make heat. Okay, so it's really your body's trying to make heat. Okay, because it's trying to survive, and through this process, it burns a lot of calories. It also we have something called brown adipose tissue. And so it's kind of so we have white fat and brown fat, okay? Brown fat, you can't really see, all right? And so brown fat is the fat on babies that keep them warm, but as we get older, we lose a lot of that brown fat. And again, you can't really see brown fat. Well, brown fat metabolizes white fat, okay? White fat is what we can see. And so the more brown fat we get, then the more it's going to help kind of metabolize the white fat. It also does increases something called adiponectin. Okay, adiponectin is a hormone that's released during cold exposure that breaks down fat, and then it makes glucose go into the muscles, okay, which can also lower blood sugar. So this can also repair the muscles. It can enhance recovery. And that's why, of course, athletes, getting a cold ice bath after an activity. And it has also been associated with treating blood sugar, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. So it has other benefits, actually. I'm not going to, it's not really specific to this talk, but cold can enhance your immune system, decrease inflammation. So has all kinds of health benefits. Probably going to do a podcast in the future just on a cold thermogenesis. Once again, I caution you, just like I cautioned you on fasting. I'm going to caution you, if you want to try this, if you have any kind of heart disease, please don't go jump into your pool in the middle of winter, unless you live in South Florida. It is a shock to the system. Okay. And so I would, again, I'm going to talk more about this in future podcasts, but I would just start off slow with this, maybe some cold showers and work your way up to the point where you can maybe take a cold shower for a minute and then just kind of keep going forward to where maybe you can eventually get in a cold bath. If you have a swimming pool, it's great. And there's actually ways that you can make a do-it-yourself kind of cold pool in your backyard using a cow trough. You can YouTube it if you're interested in that. You can also use a freezer, which my friend has done, and I believe he still does that. So in the summertime in Oklahoma, it gets very hot. He likes this practice so much. He fills up his freezer in the summertime, and he sets it to where it's like 35 degrees, so it just doesn't freeze solid. And he takes the lid off when he goes to get in it, and he gets in it for 5 minutes, gets out, puts the lid back on. So again, that's way down the road. Don't start there. Resources for this, if you go to Jack Kruse, JACKKRUSE.com, he is a physician who, does a lot of longevity and stuff research, and he has. So if you go to jackkruse.com/cold-thermogenesis, he's got some resources there as far as kind of stepwise getting you started. You can go to wimhofmethod.com, Wim Hof, W-I-M-H-O-F, wimhofmethod.com. Now, Wim Hof is, he kind of started all this stuff. Wim Hof is the Iceman is what they call him. And anyway, so you can go there. You can get, if you sign up, you can get a 3 free videos, and he kind of walks you through a stepwise approach. So I laid out 6 things. So that was the last one. 6 ways to decrease body fat, okay, and to lose weight. So we're going to go through those one last time quickly as a summary. So number 1 was to decrease carbohydrates. Number 2, eat more fat. If you're decreasing carbohydrates, you got to replace it with something. So we want to eat more fat, okay? Number three, fast. Got to incorporate this. Number four, exercise. We talked about kind of the optimal ways to do that. Number five, optimize hormones, especially things like thyroid, testosterone, and decreasing cortisol. And number six, get cold. So hope you've gained something from this. This, I believe, is a very important episode, as I mentioned, just because there are so many people who need to hear it, and there are so many people who need to incorporate these principles. So as I mentioned in the beginning, if you know somebody who can benefit from this, please pass this along so that we can get people healthy. So thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to FitRx. I invite you to share this with friends and family. If you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com. Or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com. This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk.